From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Russia Today and Sputnik have been influential outlets that have, several times, spoken mistruths about me and my campaign.
That was the current president of France, Emmanuel Macron, speaking earlier this week and alleging that Russian media outlets RT and Sputnik were agents of the state who peddle fake news with a political agenda.
That's why they were not invited to my headquarters. All media, including Russian, had access to my campaign. Russia Today and Sputnik have not behaved as media outlets and journalists, but as organs of influence and false propaganda.
In Germany also, the alleged role of Russian media in that country's elections is still being bandied about. Germany's Chancellor Angela Merkel has been in the difficult process of trying to form a government. We discussed all of that with a journalist from Sputnik. He's a frequent contributor to CPR News, Moscow-based journalist Dmitry Babich. Dmitry, Macron, French media, they're going crazy. It's like some kind of infection jumped off an airplane from Washington or something and has infected the brains of the people in Paris.
Well, that's true. Mr. Macron, he has been surprising a lot of people since the start of his, the sudden start of his political career. Just a year and a half ago, very few people knew about his existence. And he is a classical example of how the globalized media can create characters, you know, that the whole world would be looking at, you know. Suddenly, out of nowhere, this small banker who worked for the Rothschild Bank and then who served on secondary roles in the previous French government, suddenly he becomes the savior of France from the outright and extreme left danger, you know. He defeats a much more sensible candidate, François Fillon, who was actually destroyed again by the globalized media, which blew out of all proportion, a scandalous story of his wife getting some extra payments. Well, I mean, it's just amazing. You can bomb other countries like Mr. Sarkozy and still be a candidate,
right.
But your wife should not get any salaries.
Right.
From any entity that you have something to do with. That's a grave, grave crime. You can kill thousands of people in Libya and plunge the country into a civil war, as Nicolas Sarkozy did, and still you will be a respected person.
That's right.
It also reminds me of the American media. If you watch the American media, you might think that unwanted kissing is a much more grave offense than unwanted bombing by Mr. Obama. You know, unwanted kissing from Mr. Weinstein, that is horrible. You know, that is the new Hiroshima. That is the new kind of chemical attack.
Right.
And a few bombs from Mr. Obama for democratization in places like Libya or Afghanistan or Iraq.
Yeah.
That's just fine, you know.
Right. I know. It's you know, you have a body count in the case of, you know, these. I mean, look, the wars that have gone on from, let's just start with George Bush Jr., you know, forgetting, you know, we could go back to, there's still enough prep. Jimmy Carter started the war in Afghanistan in 1979. So, you know, how far back do you want to go? But, you know, there's a million or two or three or four people that are dead in the last 18 years as a consequence of U.S. policy, which, as it turns out, was done illegally with respect to the U.N. Charter and also with respect to U.S. law, although no one has, you know, really been interested in speaking up on that point from inside the U.S. government. George Bush never had to resign from anything. Barack Obama never had to resign from anything. Hillary Clinton, Donald Rumsfeld, all these people, they got to serve out their terms and they're drawing pensions now. They are not driven out like, say, Al Franken or Moore, disgraced as some kind of child molester, whatever. Now, look, I'm not saying that the problem of patriarchy, of male sexual privilege and assault isn't a problem. But the way the media is treating these things It is a problem several orders of magnitude greater than mass murder. And for some reason, I have a problem with that.
You're right. You're right. And, you know, let me just correct you in one point. I don't think that all the wars come from the United States government alone. You know, like I don't see America as somehow worse than Western Europe.
Well, you mentioned Sarkozy. You mentioned Sarkozy, for example.
He was
a bad actor.
The problem is not with nations. The problem is with ideologies. You know, the modern Western ideology, which I call ultra-liberalism, I don't like the word neoliberalism because neo is just something new, you know. The problem with the modern Western ideology is that it takes sound ideas, such as the equality of genders, for example, and just drives them to absurdity. Usually in the interests of so-called international business, or rather global business, you know, huge corporations. And sound ideas suddenly become hollow and even dangerous, you know, when they're interpreted by these new masters of the Western world. So let me just tell you about Macron, you know, what he did in the beginning of January. Yeah. Very few people noticed it in the United States, of course. In Russia, it was noticed because Macron lashed out at Russian propaganda. He was obviously having in mind the journalists of RT, previously Russia Today, and Sputnik, the two Russian media outlets where foreigners are also employed. But he was speaking to French journalists, and I think what he said, it deserves to be quoted in full. Let me quote it. "It is you, the journalists, who are the first victims of this propaganda. This propaganda imitates your tone of speech. It may even adopt your formats. It uses your vocabulary. Sometimes it may even recruit its employees among you. But in reality, these people are very different from you. And in the end, their propaganda flourishes on the confusion which we have ourselves gradually accepted." End of quote. Well, when I first heard it, I just thought, what does it remind me of? And then suddenly I realized, you know, I rushed to the old German books that I keep in my on my shelves just to remind me of the horrors of Nazism. And I found it there. It was a manual for SS servicemen operating in Russia. The manual said, "A subhuman is only by appearance biologically similar to you. In reality, it is a very different creation of nature. It has hands. It has feet, it has a kind of brain, eyes, and mouth, but spiritually and psychologically, it is further from removed from us than any animal. So, not everyone that has a human appearance is actually human. Woe to those who forget it." End of quote.
Wow.
So, basically, the SS manual said the same thing which Mr. Macron said about journalists. The SS manual denied the human nature to people who disagreed with Nazi ideology. I mean, the SS manual did not say that, for example, Italians are subhumans or Japanese. Why? Because Italians and Japanese were allies of Hitler's ideology. Right. So, you know, Russians, other Slavs, Jews, Roma people, they were called subhumans. Mostly because they happened to oppose the Nazi ideology.
Right.
And what does Mr. Macron say? You know, he never mentioned a single fact, you know, a single situation where RT or Sputnik would just get their facts wrong, where they would say untruths. He can't find it. What drives him crazy is the fact that these platforms, RT and Sputnik, they give voice to the people who are opposed to Emmanuel Macron's ideology, to ultra-liberalism. So if these people give voice to his opponents, these people are not journalists. Just like the opponents of Hitler's regime were not human to SS servicemen, in the same way opponents to Macron's, Clinton's, Mrs. May ideologies, they are not human. They are denied the right to have human nature.
You know, you also have, this echoes to me, Nazi Germany and Goebbels in particular. I'm looking at, you know, France24.com website. And in the story about this, it says, asked about the alleged Russian hacking attempts to influence the French election, Putin was indignant, then evasive. Now, listen to how he's indignant, then evasive. Quote, this is President Putin. You asked the following, quote, it is said, close quote, there was, quote, perhaps, close quote, some interference by Russian hackers. How can I comment on such a thing, close quote. That's from President Putin. Then he adds, quote, perhaps there were Russian hackers at work, perhaps not, close quote. In other words, he's mocking the use of perhaps by these people framing a question with maybe this happened and maybe not. And he's saying, I can't answer a speculative question. Ask me something and I can answer it. And then he uses their form to spit it back. And that is characterized as, and they don't give the actual Russian comments for someone to try to parse it on their own. And it says, Putin was indignant, then evasive. That's how they describe
evasive,
what you just heard.
Yes. Evasive, that is anyone who disagrees with them. He or she is evasive.
I would say sarcasm and irony, right? He was being sarcastic,
absolutely.
Of course, and
he
ironic.
He was being sarcastic, ironic. And Americans know this story very well, because I think for more than a year now, you have been violated by this constant stream of news about the Congress and the U.S. Special Services just about to show you the evidence of this so-called Russian hack and Russian interference.
Yep.
And somehow they never come up with it, but they keep promising.
Right.
Oh, there is Mr. Mueller at work. You know, he indicted Mr. Manafort, who actually, you know, the truth is that Mr. Manafort, for big bucks, worked for the presidential electoral campaign of the Ukrainian president, the ousted Ukrainian president, Viktor Yanukovych. Yanukovych was actually not a big friend of Russia. He wanted his own Ukrainian business to get kind of diluted in the European business. He wanted what I would call a European registration, a Western registration for his billions.
Right.
And Mr. Manafort helped him to become the president, and Mr. Manafort tried to orient Yanukovych towards the United States to make him a pawn of the United States. And the irony is that for this, he may get a long jail sentence.
Right, as a Russian agent and spy or whatever. In other words, what he was doing was helping to steal Ukraine from being a Russian ally to being an American colony. And for that, he's going to go to jail for being a Russian agent.
Well, the problem is that he became a victim of U.S. propaganda, in the sense that he believed it. He is not an idiot to believe it. The problem is that the U.S. propaganda made Yanukovych what he wasn't.
Right, that's right.
They presented him as a Russian puppet, as some kind of Putin's incarnation in Kiev, which is totally untrue.
It's the opposite,
Yes, but when they needed someone, some kind of a sacrificial victim, you know, to show that we found someone, they're going to put that guy in jail, they couldn't find anyone except Mr. Manafort.
Right, that's right. I know, it's amazing.
And it's just amazing. And the story continues. We keep getting all of these promises. Just to wait. Just tomorrow, just the day after tomorrow, they will show the evidence. It will be crushing. You know, the editor of BuzzFeed had the shamelessness, you know, to publish an article 1 year after they made public this so-called Christopher Steele's report about, I'm sorry, the Russian prostitutes allegedly peeing on Mr. Trump on a hotel bed that previously had belonged to Mr. Obama and his wife.
Right.
So he published all of that crap. Instead of being ashamed,
I know.
He now publishes.
He's a hero.
In the New York Times.
They were talking about him in Congress yesterday, you know, the other day. So,
yes.
Yeah.
saying that he had the courage to publish all that crap. Like no one had it, but he had the guts. And he saved the United States from a huge misfortune, because all 12 months after he published that, all the U.S. media kept being filled with reports about this so-called Russian influence.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's like a race of shamelessness, you know. Who is more shameless?
No.
The opinion editor of the New York Times? Oh, no. The opinion editor of the Washington Post? Oh, no. Right. The BuzzFeed guys?
Right.
They are the most shameless.
So, listen, let me ask you a question. As a journalist, have you ever had the occasion to listen to some White House tapes like Nixon's, like, in other words, to hear the audio quality of the White House taping system that like Nixon and LBJ used? Have you ever heard any of those tapes?
I didn't take the time to listen to them in full, but of course I know the story of Watergate and of Daniel Ellsberg's papers.
Well, I'm thinking in terms of the quality. They're very, to me, and I'm an audio engineer, they're very difficult to hear because the mic placement is, you know, random depending on where people are standing in the room and all of that. It's an old style tape recorder. You can hear kind of noises in it and everything.
Yeah.
So, now, if you think about what Watergate was, you had a couple knuckleheads breaking into this hotel where the Democratic committee was headquartered, and they were trying to plant these kind of bugs so that Nixon's people, their staff, could have recordings of that quality listening to a busy campaign office. In other words, not exactly like having a copy of every communication, phone call, everything else. It's going to be a tape, and you hope you get lucky. Well, and that Nixon gets driven out of office over that ultimately. People go to jail for years and years, even with presidential pardons, some of them. And that's then, 1973, 74, 75. Here we have this BuzzFeed releasing this thing, that report going to the FBI, that being used, we now know for fact, used to induce a FISA warrant that allows the Justice Department under Obama, which is still the high brass acting pretty much under President Obama, to wiretap the campaign, Trump's campaign. That was with the government doing that role instead of, you know, four knuckleheads. That's what's happening now. And not the one they're talking about going to jail is the one being bugged instead of the one doing the bugging.
Exactly. I mean, it's too bad that the name of that BuzzFeed editor who published this proud opinion piece in the New York Times, it's too bad his name is Ben Smith. I'm sure there are many nice Ben Smiths in the United States who have to suffer now because they have the same first and second name as
Ben
this
Smith.
How can I call him? This example of human species. I'm not going to use the same language as people who Mr. Macron imitates. But certainly that guy, I wouldn't call him a journalist, even though he might be playing with a mic. And he actually doesn't need a mic, you know. Right. He publishes stories about prostitutes being on Mr. Trump. He publishes the materials commissioned by the Democratic National Campaign to a former MI6 spy. Okay, if you publish this stuff, you are not a journalist. And you actually don't need tape recorders, micros. It's just enough to have a large sling and put, various substances into that sling. And that's all that you need as a journalist, or rather a writer.
Right.
But anyway, I think the fact that you mentioned is just astounding. There are kind of more obvious facts for me. I can just imagine how they would call Daniel Ellsberg, who published the Pentagon Papers. Mm. I can easily picture how the New York Times publishes a story about Daniel Ellsberg stealing these papers, stealing them from the nice little government that we have, the defenseless Pentagon officials, and publishing them in the interests of Putin or Brezhnev or whoever was in charge in Moscow at the time, and all of these university intellectuals, all of these media specialists, all thousands of them, listening to it. swallowing it, right, and saying that they enjoy it. You know,
you know, on this point also, that, you know, as you said, here in the United States, we're promised that, you know, here comes the evidence here, so any minute. I'm looking at this same, you know, France24.com piece, and it says, and this is from last May, I think. A Trend Micro report released in late April said the cybersecurity group was, quote, 99% sure, closed quote, that Russian hackers were targeting Macron's campaign. They don't offer any evidence. It's another one of these assessments that, well, we're 99% sure. Now, look over it next to France, back to Germany, and they're forming a new government there. But we've had the same thing there, that there's tampering by Russia in their elections and all of this, and there's no evidence of any of that, and left to their own devices, because I don't think anyone's accusing Russia of tampering with the attempt to put together a government in Germany. They seem to have their own problems without Russia or anybody else.
My friend, I'm sorry, but you are behind the news.
Oh.
The Russian government was accused this week by McMaster of interfering with the Mexican election, which is still to happen, but Russia has already interfered.
Well, they must have a time machine or something.
Today we had the latest warnings about Russians interfering in the Italian and the Serbian elections, which are also yet to happen. And about the German election, believe me, during all of the first 9 months of 2017, and even before that, there were constant stories in the German, American, British, French media accusing Russia of somehow trying to damage right. Mrs. Merkel and her chances of becoming the chancellor again. I noticed that when she was lagging behind in opinion polls, the suspicions became more loud, like they were hedging their bets. If heaven forbid, she loses, then they were ready to ascribe it to Russians. When she was ahead in the polls again, suddenly, the German intelligence officials themselves came out and said that, you know, these suspicions were not proven. We have made the checks. We didn't find anything. So, in fact, they didn't find anything. In fact, I'm sure Russia did not interfere, even probably should, because Mrs. Merkel said that our president lived in a different world. Just like Mr. Cameron, who accused us of interfering in the Brexit vote and in general of disliking him. Don't forget that he compared Putin to Adolf Hitler, Russia to Nazi Germany. Mrs. Clinton, who called Putin, let me quote it, the godfather of extreme nationalisms in the world. Mm-hmm. Later on, she was dismayed by the fact that the Russian media somehow liked her less than Trump. and somehow in general was not sympathetic towards her. Mm. And Mr. Putin, he was so bad. She said that his election was neither free nor fair, and he had the dishonesty to say the same about her and her defeat, you know.
Right.
Actually, now she is saying that her defeat was neither free nor fair,
right? That's right,
right?
That's
because
right.
Because she keeps questioning the election.
Yep.
And Trump is, I think Trump is in an idiotic position right now, because what can he say to Putin after all this pressure from the New York Times and the Washington Post? What can he ask Putin? Can he ask him just to stop telling me that I won honestly, you know, say that I won dishonestly with your help?
You know,
that is kind of an idiotic situation, you know.
For me,
the New York.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
The New York Times wants Mr. Trump to call his own election dishonest.
Right.
You know,
right.
You know, the Nazis were awful hypocrites, and they forced people to do all kinds of bad things. But even they didn't try to force, say, the former French Prime Minister, Léon Blum, who was Jewish. They didn't force him to say that he was elected dishonestly, that the communists stole his election.
Right.
So the United States, in its current form and in its current ideology of ultra-liberalism, went further ahead down the path of absurdity than even the Nazi detractors of Léon Blum.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I'm looking at what's been going on in the United States now for the last year and a half, and also in Europe, around the Brexit vote, around the French vote, around the German vote. I mean, no one here mentions the fact that, you know, Merkel's been chancellor for 12 years, and that maybe the reason she's not popular is because of what she's done over the last 12 years.
And of course, Putin, you know, when he stayed the president for 8 years, that was like a hell of a lot of time for the Western media. Mm. And they speculated whether he was going to run himself. Mm. They were prepared to start a rebellion in Russia in case he doesn't hand power to someone else. And he actually chose Mr. Medvedev as his successor later on. But 12 years with Mrs. Merkel is fine. 8 years with Putin is awful, right?
Right, that's right. And with Obama, too. Obama was fine 8 years. So, let's see. They're trying to form the government. Let's talk about what's actually happening there, too, and what it might mean for Russia and peace, generally.
Well, I think that the German Social Democratic Party is going through a terrible humiliation right now, because their leader, who is actually no better than Mrs. Merkel, you know, Martin Schulz, the former chairman of the European Parliament. Their leader has said several times after very bad election results, this September, that he would not form a coalition with Mrs. Merkel, that the Social Democratic Party was damaged by several years of the so-called big coalition with Mrs. Merkel and her Christian Democrats. He kept saying it, only to say now that finally, after weighing all the options, he decided that it was possible, right? And you don't need a crystal ball. You can see lots of, fat cats, big business leaders, U.S. officials, NATO officials, EU officials. You can see them all pushing Mr. Schulz towards forming a coalition with Chancellor Merkel. And this is so awful, because everyone understands it's going to kill the remnants of the Social Democratic Party's popularity. Social Democratic Party is the oldest party in Germany, which has a glorious history. I mean, there were some dark spots on it, like in the 20s, when 30. Basically the Noske, who was a Social Democratic Interior Minister, he brutally cracked down on a leftist rebellion in Germany. So there were black spots, but in general, you know, their fight against Nazism, their participation in the post-war reconstruction of Germany, their non-acceptance of the regime in East Germany, which finally cracked up not to be as democratic as a lot of people expected in the late 40s. So they had a glorious history, and now you can see how they're surrendering it. Actually, the German liberals, the so-called Free Democratic Party, they have just been destroyed by several years of coalition with Chancellor Merkel. Their leader, Guido Westerwelle, when he was the foreign minister in Merkel's government, he went to Kiev to speak to the protesting crowds on Maidan. Not even protesting, but, throwing Molotov cocktails. And that is not interference in Ukraine's affairs. Right. That doesn't need to be investigated by special services of Ukraine or Russia or Germany. That is fine. But rumors about Russian hackers, that is really dangerous.
Right.
So the liberals were destroyed by their experience with Merkel. So she is kind of toxic. You know, what she does, she makes alliances with various parties, and she destroys their reputation. So she already did it to the liberals. She did it to the Greens. Now she's going to basically to finish the Social Democrats. Yeah. 3 or 4 years with her, and they're done.
I want to discuss that further next week after we see how this shakes out. And I really appreciate your time, Dmitry. And be well. Okay?
Thank you.
And that's all the news we have for you right now.
For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.